welcome to the Germ to Jar Cannabis Cultivation Podcast, the show where we talk about everything related to cannabis cultivation and help to cultivate cultivators. I'm your host, AJ Tobian, and this is episode 5. Let me start by saying that I hope everyone listening to this is doing well and staying healthy during these truly strange and uncertain times. I do not want to get political or controversial, but I feel that I have a voice, albeit a very small one, but a voice all the same that I would like to use to convey a small message on the pandemic situation. I just implore everyone to be mindful of their fellow man, woman, or child around them. You may not be overly concerned about how this virus may affect you, but being careless may inadvertently affect others. That's all I want to say on that subject. Let's beat this, get past it, and against all the odds, prove that humanity can bind together to overcome a single common enemy. Moving on from that, I want to acknowledge that only 5 episodes in, I've already fallen behind on the timeliness of these episode releases. I assure you that I'm doing my best to stay on schedule, but responsibilities have kept me from doing more at this time. That's not an excuse, just the reasoning behind why I haven't put anything out on this platform for a little bit. I say this platform because I have continued to stay engaged with my followers on Instagram and Facebook and have released some video journal updates on my YouTube channel. So if you're in search of more content from me, then I encourage you to check out those other outlets of mine. As I always mention at the end of the show, these accounts are all under CanCanGrow, CanCanGrow, although I am working at establishing the profiles under the Germ to Jar podcast also. Bottom line is, they all connect to me and all the content I share is cannabis cultivation related. I receive no monetary return from doing all this, which is why these efforts take the back burner when it conflicts with providing for my family. But I have no qualms in saying it's a dream of mine to make a living cultivating and educating others on this practice. I don't know entirely how I would be able to make that transition, but in the meantime, my passion for doing this drives me to continue to freely share whatever info I can whenever I can. With that said, if anyone listening has benefited from all I put out there and is compelled to support my efforts financially, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/cancangrow. I've not been able to populate that platform with much content, but rest assured that any contributions given go towards my entire effort. Let me close this topic off by saying that just by tuning in, watching, listening, following, subscribing, commenting, and everything else you already do to support me really makes me feel like a king. Any monetary support I get just helps this king pursue his dream. I know, sounds a little cheesy, but anyways, wow, that got off topic pretty fast. The main reason for the delay in recording this episode has been because I was intending to continue the Grow Light series, but I've not been able to compile all the info for the next segment. Instead of delaying this episode further, I've decided to continue the Grow Light deep dive next episode and catch you all up on my grow and tackle questions that have been sent in and were waiting to be answered. In case you're wondering, the next segment of the Grow Light talk will be a detailed look at all the different types of grow lights available. So let's get on to the garden update. This episode is being recorded on March 28th, and GR14 was harvested on March 10th, hung to dry for 8 days, taken down for trimming 3 days ago, and has been completely hand-trimmed and jarred for storage. Make sure to tune in into my YouTube channel for the upcoming episode on this run, where I'll be sharing the final dry weights along with my thoughts on the results and areas to improve. Next up is the Mars Hydro SP250 LED Pheno Hunt Run. This run is on day 30 of flower, and since the last episode, I found one of the plants had hermied on me, so it was culled immediately, but unfortunately, not before one of the pollen sacs had burst open. It's extremely difficult to tell how much and which of the plants or flowers may have been pollinated, so I'm just going to go ahead and complete the run. Because it's a pheno hunt, I should still be able to see enough to determine which would be the selected keeper phenos. Aside from that little problem, everything else in this run right now is great. In the next video journal update I post for this run, I will be talking about what equipment I'm using for this setup and how easy it's made to control the environment and dial everything in. My pheno hunt for the Black Dosey Fire is the next run I currently have in flower. It's on day 16 of bloom and progressing along very nicely. The last video update I posted on my channel was of this run, so if you want to visually see what's up with these girls, make sure to watch that. Something that just started to happen and is not on that video update is the darkening of the leaves on a couple of phenos. The plants are likely just displaying some of their blackberry kush phenotypical expressions. It's very cool as I've never grown a black cultivar before, and I hope they continue to darken up because it'll definitely be fun to watch. GR15 is in the veg tent and has been there for 12 days. It's going to be a challenge to keep an even canopy here because it's 5 different cultivars with 16 different phenos. These cuts were taken from the plants in the Mars Hydro SP250 Pheno Hunt run, but unlike that run, they're not in solo cups. The importance of that is that there is nothing stopping these girls from having very different plant growth. To slow down a few of the plants from almost growing into the light, I went ahead and topped the ones that had a lot more vigorous growth than the others and will continue to trim them back in hopes the other smaller plants catch up a bit. The flip side is that I will now get to see fully what these plants can do growth-wise since there's nothing to restrict their growth vigor. Finally, I took the cuts for Grow Run 16 from a couple of the Black Dosey Fire moms that I have. Because I'm still running the pheno hunt for that strain, this is not a monocrop of a keeper pheno, but from what I've seen so far from the Black Dosey Fire run I have in flower, this should still be a quality run. The cuts were taken a couple days ago, but just set into Rockwell cubes today. I'll be posting pics of them on my Instagram. That's the full garden update, and if you'd like to visually see any of these runs, watch the video journals I post on my YouTube channel at CanCanGrow. Now, questions and answers, Q&A. So the first one was sent in. I don't believe any of these questions that were sent in detailed whether I was able to use their handle, so I'm not going to be stating who they're from. But let's start with the first one. It goes, "What's up, man? Been listening to your podcast. Good stuff. I had a question about automation. I am looking at different environment controllers, but they are so expensive. I have heard about using a Raspberry Pi or something similar for automation for a lot less. Do you know if there's any way to find people who sell these solutions? I will be running living soil with blue mats, so that part is taken care of. Looking at CO2 mitigation and environmentals." So that was the whole message. So in response, I'll start by saying I'm glad you've enjoyed the podcast so far and hope you continue to tune in. There's no doubt that any type of automation in a home grow can be very costly. A big reason for that is that automation for small-scale grows is still a fairly new thing that is mostly technology-based, and with the new tech, particularly when you're making it smaller and more consumer-friendly, usually commands a higher price tag. As more options surface every day and competition in this space increases, we will see prices drop more and more like we've already begun to see. I do realize that we haven't gotten to a price point that most would call affordable, but we are moving in that direction. As for your suggestion to use a product like Raspberry Pi to build your own system from scratch, that's an amazing idea, but it requires the know-how to do that. I really don't know of any company offering DIY options like that, but there are some online tutorials to help you fabricate your own solution if you're handy. I know it's not what you or most want to hear, but quality, full automated systems are still in the neighborhood of about $1,000, Canadian anyways. If you're in the US, you can do the conversion. A solution for environment control could be to buy standalone Wi-Fi enabled temp and humidity monitors that will allow you to monitor your environment remotely. Then you can use Wi-Fi enabled outlets for your exhaust fans, humidifiers, dehumidifiers, etc. By doing that, you can turn your environment control equipment off and on remotely as needed. This is not a fully automated option, but it's how I've structured my grow until I have the budget to invest in a fully automated system. Maybe, if there's interest, I can do a little video on my YouTube channel showing how I do that. For anyone listening to this, email me or message me on IG if that's something that you'd like to see. So, the next question... Again, I can't say who it came from, but it goes, so you put your plants in the flower even though they are still quite small. I'm learning and watching. I'm pretty sure we wait too long to go in the flower because they get so big. I can't get in the room. So that was a short message, but thank you again for sending that in. Whoever, if you're listening, you'll know who you are. I only veg for 3 to 4 weeks or 21 to 28 days because I do grow smaller plants in a SOG, a sea of green setup. I can do this because I have a high plant count and can increase yields per run by just adjusting the number of plants in the run, as opposed to having to train plants to increase the canopy size and the number of tops. Not only can I increase yields per run by doing this, but the true advantage of running a sea of green approach with a short veg, with short veg cycles, is that I can complete 5 to 6 full turns per year, as opposed to 2 to 3 runs per year, which happens when you end up training your plants and vegging for 2 to 4 months or more in some cases. The main thing I wanted to respond to in your comment was this issue of plants getting too big when cultivating indoors. I feel this is a more common problem than growers realize, and when it happens, it can cause many issues, particularly under HID lights. With proper planning, it is very easily avoidable. The key is to know in advance what the maximum height is that you can safely grow your plants to. To figure that out, first record the total height of your grow space, then add up the full height of your light fixture, including the hanging brackets, hooks, and rope hangers, the minimum height your light can be above your canopy, and the height of your grow container from the ground to the top of the medium. Finally, subtract that figure from the total height of your grow space, and you'll know the maximum height you can safely grow your plants. So, as an example, in my flowering tent, the height of the tent is 80 inches, and the total for the height of my fixture, floor to the top of my medium and minimum distance from my ceramic metal halide light to the top of the canopy is 45 inches. So 80 inches total height minus 45 inches, which is the total of those three parameters I mentioned, gives me a maximum height of 35 inches I can grow my plants. Using that number, we can now determine the height at which we need to flip the flower. Majority of cannabis cultivars will stretch 100% to 200%, or 2 to 3 times of the height of that the plant is when it's flipped. Indica leaning plants tend to lean more towards doubling in height, whereas sativa leaning plants more towards the tripling in height. So going back to my setup with a max height of 35 inches, if I give myself a 5-inch cushion, then I would want to flip my grow when the plants from the top of the medium are 10 to 15 inches in height, cultivar dependent. This calculation will apply to pretty much any method of growing, whether you're using a SOG, Sea of Green, a SCROG, Screen of Green, or if you stake your plants in individual pots. One instance where it would need to be adjusted would be if you were to SCROG and plan to weave the stretch in flower through the netting. In that case, you could place the SCROG net higher at about half or one third of the final height you can place a SCROG net higher than half to one third of the final height because much of the stretch you'll get in flower would be weaved through your netting. In my opinion, if you're scrogging, it's preferable to fill the squares of the net by weaving through or bending below the net the growth in veg and allow the stretch to grow through, possibly into another net or two. Bear in mind, this is coming from someone who doesn't use this method or of scrogging, so feel free to scrog whichever way has been working for you. Bottom line is, if you methodically determine when you flip your plants to flower by reverse engineering from the desired final height and using the calculation of half to one third of that height to be the height at which you flip, then you can almost certainly avoid any excessive height issues throughout your grow run. Cannabis cultivation can be both science and art. I am analytical and believe virtually all variables can be calculated in advance, allowing for very few surprises. By doing this, it also becomes much easier to teach other cultivators a step-by-step method with predetermined numbers and timeframes. That's not to say that growing through feel and intuition in an artful way is a lesser way or less successful approach. It's just different. The topic of cultivation as a science or art is actually a preview into your future podcast episode, so continue to tune in to learn my thoughts on that. So the next question I have here says, "Hey Can-Can, I enjoyed your first couple of podcasts and I'm looking forward to more to come. As for a question or topic, I would really be interested in hearing or learning about pruning. I've done it on my outside grows and have seen a great improvement with yield, but never indoors on a schedule. For fun, this year I decided to bring my grow inside and sign up for Coco for Cannabis's New Year's Grow Challenge. I've never grown inside before, so I'm not sure when is the best time to prune. I just flipped to 12-12 lighting and not sure if I should still prune or just let the plant do its thing. If possible, could you give me the Cole's notes on pruning via message, because this message was actually sent to me on Instagram, and discuss it in full on one of your podcasts. If you're too busy, I totally understand. No worries. Keep up the good work. Cheers." And he actually followed up that message with, "Oh, if you're looking for more topics or questions, humidity is a good one. I'm having the issue of low humidity. When the lights are on, the humidity is around 30%. When they are off, it's around 55%. How important is it is keeping the humidity level constant. The same could be said with my temperature. When the lights are on, it's 26 Celsius, and when they are off, it goes down to 18 Celsius. Is constant temperature important? So that's a lot to unpack. First off, thanks for tuning in, and I'm sure you'll enjoy experiencing the differences of cultivating indoors versus out. I also think it's great that you've joined the community at Coco for Cannabis and are participating in their New Year's Grow Challenge. The first thing I'm going to say regarding pruning is that whatever you've done in that regard with your outdoor grows will likely still get you the results indoors. In the future, I will be doing detailed episodes encompassing all plant training, manipulation, and growth management techniques, which would include pruning. Specific to your question, though, today, I'll go a little deeper into what you're asking about. I feel that pruning is one of three different techniques that most cultivators associate with this area of plant training. The other two are what most refer to as defoliation and lollipopping. My definition for each are as follows. Defoliation is the purposeful removal of leaf matter, usually fan leaves, from some areas or in some cases, the entire plant, usually at predetermined intervals during the life cycle of the plants. Pruning is the almost necessary removal of damaged or dead leaf matter throughout the entire growth process. Lollipopping is the purposeful removal of all growth in the bottom one-third to bottom half of the plant. While pruning, I feel, is a necessary practice to grow healthy plants, defoliation and lollipopping are both strategic practices that are not necessarily required, but done properly, can be beneficial. Lollipopping is far less controversial and widely considered a very beneficial practice as it eliminates larfy bud growth, increases beneficial airflow below the canopy, and helps in deterring pests and pathogen outbreaks that can start at the base of the plant and work its way up. People who lollipop also do so based on the belief that they are helping the plant to focus energy and resources towards the more important higher potency and yielding top buds. Defoliation is much more controversial. I don't want to get into the debate, but will share my point of view on the matter. I believe that leaving healthy foliage on the plant will definitely help grow happier, healthier, higher quality, and higher yielding plants. For that to happen, it would require a very specific or, dare I say, perfect environment. Most indoor growers, and some outdoor growers for that matter, frankly do not have that perfect environment, so strategic defoliation is necessary to keep the plants healthy and pest or pathogen free. Strategic defoliation can help increase airflow through the canopy, increase light penetration, particularly with lower intensity grow lights, and help maintain consistent RH, relative humidity conditions, through lower transpiration rates and less pockets of potential microclimates. These are just a few of the significant benefits of strategic defoliation. So although I support the idea that keeping leaves on the plant is ideal, I do advocate strategic defoliation and actually practice it myself when it's done for a purpose. What I'm against is defoliating and worse, over defoliating just because a grower heard or feels it's something they need to do to produce higher yields. I realize there are growers out there who swear by it, and I'm not calling them out because I'm sure it works to their benefit in their situations, but in my opinion, those are situation specific and should not be automatically adopted by growers based on the same assumptions. So here's the bottom line guidelines I'll give. If you have a strategic reason to defoliate, please go ahead and do so, because although I don't believe it will increase yields, it can ensure a clean harvest with consistent or strong yields. When you defoliate, remove less than more, because you can always remove more leaves if needed, but you can't put them back if you've gone too far. And finally, when doing any significant defoliation, I would recommend doing it at once rather than than sporadically throughout the life of the plant to reduce unnecessary stress. So I found the best times to do it are 1 week prior to changing to the flowering light cycle, and a second time at weeks 3 or 4 of flower, which is generally when most cultivars have done stretching, and approximately 2 to 3 weeks prior to them halting the production of all new vegetative growth to focus entirely on the ripening of the flowers, which usually happens around week 6 of flower. These are also my markers for when I do my lollipopping. Now, for the second question you sent regarding humidity and temperature, these two parameters fall into the realm of environment control, which is a topic that is as deep, if not deeper, a deeper hole to dive into than the current topic of grow lights, which we're currently in and is once again definitely another area I plan on covering in a future show. For now, in specific reference to your comments, I will say that consistent RH and temps in the ideal range are quite advantageous to plant growth, but you can still produce successful results with fluctuations between a relatively wide range of each. It's fair to say that it may not have the plants growing and producing at full potential, but it would be far from poor results. You said that your relative humidity is between 30 and 50% during lights on and off respectively, and that your temps swing from 26 Celsius to 18 Celsius within the same time frames. I mentioned both of those together as opposed to how they were addressed in your question, because relative humidity and grow room temperatures are tied together because they directly impact one another. Without getting into too much detail, if water vapor content in the air were to stay constant, RH readings would slide up as temperatures go down, because RH is exactly that, relative. Hotter air requires more water vapor to become fully saturated, and less when temps are low. Because of that, the percentage of humidity in the air relative to full saturation is lower in warmer temps and higher in lower temps, even when the water vapor content remains the same. This is mostly the reason you're seeing higher RH during lights off period, because your temps during that period are cooler. With all that said, in my opinion, you're operating within a very acceptable range for both your RH and temps, and as long as you're consistently in that range, you should be fine. Problems tend to creep in when there are significant spikes in either area, particularly in RH. Most home growers simply do not have the equipment to control these parameters granularly, and all we can do is try to keep them as close to this range as possible. If you could do something about it, outside of late flower, a higher RH during lights on would definitely help the plants. Further to that, if you're under LEDs, a higher room ambient temp would be more ideal. So that wraps it up for this episode. I hope you enjoyed this slightly truncated format and was still able to garner some valuable information. Make sure to like and review the show on your favorite podcast directory. If you want more from the Germ to Jar Cannabis Cultivation Podcast, follow the show's other online properties on Twitter. It's at Germ to Jar PC. Instagram, at Germ to Jar Podcast. Facebook, the Germ to Jar Cannabis Cultivation Podcast. And stay tuned for the upcoming launch of our website, www.germtojarpodcast.com. We definitely want to hear from you, so please reach out to me with questions, comments, thoughts on the broadcast, suggestions, or just to say hi by email, which is questions with an S at germtojarpodcast.com. Or if anything you've learned from the show has helped you and your garden, I would love to see posts about it on any of your social media platforms. When you do, make sure to tag or hashtag Germ to Jar Podcast, can grow, and keep growing that fire so I and others can see it. And of course, make sure that you follow those hashtags also. I'm your host, AJ Tobian, and if you'd like to follow me, I am at CanCanGrow on virtually all social media platforms, predominantly on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Patreon. Thank you for tuning in, and until the next episode, keep growing that fire.